Welcome to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph, as she explores the ever-changing music industry with today's top creatives, artists, and executives. Enjoy these fun and informative conversations with a little bit of love thrown in along the way.
Welcome to For Love and Music with me, Tara Joseph. Now, I'm super excited about today's guest. You really, really don't get much more successful than he is. So let's welcome to the show world-renowned producer, CEO, Chief Executive Officer, and co-founder of Bleeding Fingers Music and Extreme Music, the amazing Russell Emmanuel. Russell, how are you?
Crikey. I think you do get more successful. I mean, Kanye is up there, I would say.
But in the world that you inhabit...
Oh, it's a tiny world.
No, you inhabit an amazing world.
No, it's all right.
Let's not put yourself down.
It's not a real job. Let's put it that way.
Well, I don't know where you're sitting right now. The listeners can't see, but I can see that you're sitting in the most magnificent studio with how many guitars behind you? I think it's seven, three, four, five.
Oh, there's more. It goes on. Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Nine guitars, is it?
Yeah, that's because my son has stolen a few of them.
Wow. What an amazing collection. And do you play all of those?
Not at the same time, I don't, no.
So you're not that good then?
No, three at one time is the maximum I can.
Fair enough. But tell us, where are you right now?
I'm at home. This is my studio, which is in the basement here. Look, I'll see if I can spin the thing around.
People listening, it's really impressive. Really, really
best impressive. Part is that I do have a wine bar in there.
It does.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Everything else is irrelevant.
So, I mean, really, what a better place. There's no better place to spend COVID than there with your guitars and all your wine.
Not really. It's like, it's running out. I'm going to have to stock up.
Yeah, you've got to keep it fully stocked.
Yeah, it's not terrible. I've been in worse.
So have you literally been locked in there for the past few months? Is that where you've been situated?
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. And I can get a lot done here. But funny enough, you go stir crazy wherever you are, I think.
Yeah. I mean, have you found that being in forced isolation has changed your creativity to chosen isolation, so to speak?
Well, actually, my job is more social. I'm generally around other musicians and I miss that. And even the remote stuff is a poor substitute, I think. You miss body language. You miss just... And everyone's very focused on getting everything done in the instant.
Yeah.
Whereas there's much more kind of social. I mean, that's the reason really we're in this level of work is the social aspect is so great. And you mix with these amazing creative people. Everyone's got busier, I think. Everyone's got to achieve so much in the day that they've got this. Here's your time slot.
Yeah.
I'd never heard the word hard out until I thought it was something rude. Now everyone's got one.
That's for the explicit podcast that we'll do later.
Okay, great.
So tell me, listen, you are CEO, Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Bleeding Fingers Music, which you founded with the incredible Hans Zimmer. So tell me, how did that relationship come about? What a partnership.
I got very lucky, I think. We've now been friends for a long time, but when I initially heard from him, I was back in dodgy old Camden Town in our start. We had Extreme Music. We were a very young company, and we started in the old Stiff Records building in Camden Town. And Salubrious was one of the... We couldn't even spell Salubrious. You know Camden Town. I mean, it was very dodgy.
Yeah.
In the late 90s, especially. So we were plugging away at creating this new company, Extreme Music, and we were making a bit of a stir. We were doing some irreverent stuff. And somehow he'd heard about us. I have no idea what happened. And his office contacted us and the phone rang and it's Hans Zimmer on the phone. I honestly had no idea who it was. I'd heard the name because I'd bought this back in the day. I used to buy packs of, or they were CDs at the time, that went into samples, and there was a guitar one called Hans Zimmer Guitars, and I had that for some reason. I thought he was a guitarist. Anyway, so I flew over, and it became apparent immediately as I got to Los Angeles, because he had these incredible studios, and I think...
What year was this interest?
I think this was 99.
Right, okay. What an amazing call to get.
Yeah, great call, wow. And amazing to go in that blind. and then very scary very quickly because I got taken into the studio. I can't remember what it was doing something. I think maybe Black Hawk Down or King Arthur or something huge. Right. And it became apparent I was immediately out of my depth. But we just became fast collaborators, friends, and he has an incredible partner as well, Stephen Kofsky, who runs his business side. And together, they're an amazing team. And I would say he is my family now. And it was just one of those things. And it just turned into this great partnership. And for many years, we weren't in business together. And then we had this idea of creating a landing place for young, exciting new composers. It, almost an accelerant or a hothouse of kind of spotting this young talent and giving them all the support they need to get into the industry quickly without sitting and making someone's coffee for 5 years and being an assistant and seeing their talent wasted. And that was kind of the idea. And it stemmed from the fact that Hans had so many great, he's a kind of magnet for talent, and these assistants would come through the campus and then there would be nowhere for them to go, not just because there's a finite amount of projects. It just naturally evolved conversations and kind of the idea. And then so we developed Bleeding Fingers as a place for them to be and collaborate together. And I think that was the big part of it. It was kind of composers are solitary normally. We wanted this to be a collaborative effort.
When my partner, one of my business partners, Tim Byrne, and I came down to Hans's studio complex in Santa Monica, I'd never been there before. And it was overwhelming. I mean, it really was. But one of the things really stands out that you just said was young people. It was full of young people. And I loved that. And every nook and cranny, there was another young person who clearly is super talented and learning the ropes from people such as yourself, from Hans, from the other members of the more senior team. I mean, it was really like, wow. It was really exciting to see so much young talent.
We get that all the time. People feel that because...
Oh, yeah.
The energy that they bring and the excitement they bring is, it does take some wrangling. But we've been very lucky and we've built this team. I think we now, just at Bleeding Fingers, have 18, soon to be 20 composers.
Incredible.
They're all working. And, you know, when we started, which was 5 or 6 years ago, we were really cutting our teeth on reality TV. But now we're doing a lot of the BBC's blue chip natural history shows, a lot of science shows. Got some scripted projects underway. We score The Simpsons every week, 22 weeks a year, and that's a ride in itself. So we're doing these.
So that's an incredible gig to get.
Amazing. And then we've got composers working on it.
Incredible.
Super young for that kind of the weight that show carries, the level of responsibility. I mean, when we won that job about 3 years ago, and I said at the time, this is like being handed the crown jewels.
Absolutely.
You've got to be super careful. And then you've got composers, young composers working on it, which is gratifying and exciting and just a joy to watch themselves kind of have that experience.
So is that a full-time job for those specific composers?
The show does go on a break for a short time each year, but there are 22 episodes, and I think we're scoring for about 30 weeks a year.
Wow. What an amazing gig to get.
Yeah,
and obviously, you're very involved with Sir David Attenborough and the BBC, BBC Planet Earth 2, yes. Blue Planet 2, and Bleeding Fingers was nominated for a BAFTA and an Emmy, wasn't it?
Emmy
for Planet Earth 2.
The word nominated, does that mean second position? I'm not sure what that means anymore.
It means you were one of a select group of people.
Very, of course, that's what it means, yeah. We've been very lucky. And I'm not used to the awards thing. It's something, I think the British are a little, we like getting them, but we kind of keep it under our hat, don't we? But when you're here, people celebrate them.
Oh, yeah.
Almost daily.
Yeah.
How many awards? We're very lucky. We just, I'm going to contradict myself now and tell you that we just won 2 Webbies for an amazing podcast.
Congratulations.
That we did for BBC World Service.
Right. Brilliant.
You have to listen to 13 Minutes to the Moon.
Okay. I will definitely check that out.
Episodes, and it is an amazing, amazing podcast about the Apollo missions.
Oh, goodness.
So we got Best Music and we got the People's Choice Award. So
that's brilliant. Congratulations.
Those two things. They look like shock absorbers in there.
Oh, okay. On the second shelf.
Yeah.
Okay. So people, again, I'm looking into Russell's studio, and behind him is a cabinet, and I can see his Webby Awards.
Yes, there you go. A couple of things in there, but I'm going to try and fill it up one day.
You will.
Yes.
I have no doubt about that. I have no doubt about that. So you must get sort of approached all the time to do collaborations and score. How do you, are you quite specific about the kind of work you'll take on? Because I think you're probably in a luxurious position where you can be quite picky.
Well, get offered amazing stuff all the time. So we're very lucky. It depends. When do you think this will go out?
This will go out, I think, in around late August, September. Hold on, I can actually tell you. Hold on.
So it's exciting because we're always kind of, what I like is different stuff comes to us, stuff that is unexpected.
Around the 11th of September.
Well, that's perfect. So, yeah, it's the unexpected, you know, the phone does ring, fortunately. I've been in the days where it didn't ring, by the way. And nowadays it does ring even during COVID, which is nice. And it's exciting when there's just unexpected gigs.
Anything you can tell us about?
Well, I think literally we just finished last week a very interesting project for the US Marines, which will be airing by the time this airs. Big TV campaign. And what was fun about that was we actually got to bring the Marines band into Fox Studio and record them.
When did you do it?
We did it last Friday.
Oh, you did? So really? Okay.
We had to do it in sessions. It was very interesting because we had to bring the percussion in, and then we had a 3-hour sanitization turnover. Then the brass came. It was a crazy session. Screens up and only 3 people in a control room that can probably house 30.
I suppose it's the new normal now, isn't it?
It's the new normal. So that's exciting. And I love podcasts are my thing. I'm a huge podcast fan. I listen to many, many of them. So the 13 minutes of the moon thing was just, I think because they're so intimate, you listen, it's in your head. And composing for a podcast was a completely different challenge. And that's exciting. Anything around the planet Earth is just a joy. Not getting in the way of Sir David's voice, which really is the crown jewel. I mean, undoubtedly. Again, another exciting project is we've just done a symphony for the planet, which will be the BBC of gifting the nation for COVID. Let's refocus. Let's look at the planet. Let's take our inspiration from the planet. And that's with Hans and Bleeding Fingers and Sir David. And we're featuring Dave the rapper as playing piano, which is going to be amazing. So that's super exciting.
You've got it all going on. I mean, seriously, that's incredible.
Yeah, we've just done this great thing. Do you know Headspace?
Yes, absolutely. I try and listen to it as much as possible.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you see, we've just created a collection of music for them, for Focus, for people to help them.
When does that go onto the app?
I believe it goes onto the app in a few weeks. So we've got this huge diversity, and then we're doing a project with you, which is...
Well, yes, and I'm excited to start talking about that, because I've only recently been able to talk about it.
Yeah, now that's
Let's
super...
talk about it.
And talk about, I mean, so it couldn't get more diverse. Let's talk about that.
So, okay, I mentioned earlier that one of my business partners, the fabulous Tim Byrne, who is a fellow music manager, and Tim and I were asked by Decca Records in the UK to find 4 of the best operatic voices in the world, 2 tenors and 2 baritones. So some of you may have heard the podcast I did with the 4 guys a couple of weeks ago when it came out. But for those of you who aren't aware, the group is made up of Georg Festel, who is our bass baritone from Germany, Edward Lawrenson, who is our baritone from New Zealand, Daniel Lopez, who is one of our tenors from New York, and half American, half Guatemalan, actually, and the lovely David Webb, who is British and, again, one of our tenors. So Decca, very fortuitously, introduced us to the fabulous Russell, who is going to be producing their album, which we are recording later this year and will come out next year.
Yeah, that's a great project. That really has been, we're having so much fun creating the tracks. And again, completely unexpected and something that we haven't done before. We've produced albums, but not this way. And I think bringing the kind of the epic Hollywood orchestration to opera, I haven't heard that done before. And it's been really an incredible adventure.
Well, the guys are so excited to be working with you. They really, really are. And I think that obviously we sort of started to work with you just as the coronavirus started to break. So then we had to sort of wait a few months to, you know, all get back together again. They've just released their debut single, When She Loved Me, on the 7th of August, which is from the Decca Records, Walt Disney Records album, Disney Goes Classical, which comes out on October the 2nd. And it's been wonderful to work with them through this initial release in preparation for them then working with you later on in the year. So it's all starting to happen for the guys. It's really exciting, really exciting.
Yeah, they sound great together.
Don't they really?
Yeah, they sound like they've been together for a long time.
Right.
But yeah, I think some of the experimentation that we're able to do there, it's going to be a new sound for this genre. I mean, definitely is a genre. It's a well-trodden path. But what we're aiming to do is kind of make it sound fresh. And the way we're orchestrating it is very much in the film score vein rather than the classic pop vein. I think it's working.
100%. And I think that's exactly what we need to do for this project to make it stand out from any of the other sort of groups in a similar vein that have come out before them.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. And putting it together the way we're having to as well is an interesting challenge. I know next week we're putting on amazing live drums, incredible drummer over at Bob Clear Mountain Studio.
Oh, brilliant.
And so you'll get to hear that.
Oh, I can't wait. So yeah. Exciting.
We'll film some of that so that you can...
Okay.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Great drummer, Chet Lang. He's really super exciting to watch. And I don't know how much we can say, but I know that we're going to have some amazing guest players on the album as well.
We definitely are. Well, we have to keep a little bit hush-hush.
Yes, we do.
All the way right now. But I'm really excited that we are actually able to talk about it because it's been so top secret for so long. For 3 years, Tim and I have been working on this. And now that it's actually happening and the guys are so amazing and they're so delightful and we've got you at the helm musically, what more could we want?
Oh, no pressure.
No pressure intended.
No. Wow.
So tell me, now, my podcast is called For Love and Music, which are the two reasons that I moved to LA for life and music. I tell everyone this. The listeners are probably bored of hearing.
I thought you were on
that.
The run.
Well, I don't tell people.
Okay, all right.
I pretend it was love.
Okay, all right.
No one said that to me before. I really like that. That's really good. So, yes, what I like to try and find out amongst all the music that we talk about,
is
has love ever guided you or made you? Helped make you decide on a different route within your career?
Mikey.
Yeah, I know.
That's a huge question.
Is it? You can say no. If the answer's no, that's fine.
No, I'm not going to say no.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm not going to say no because I've never thought about it.
Has it made you change your direction or unexpected twists and turns?
Well, I suppose the weird answer is I did marry my assistant. Does that...
That is the best answer I've ever had.
So, I guess.
And she's American?
She's Canadian.
Okay.
We're both here in Los Angeles. She worked for me in London. And then we moved to Los Angeles. At that time, we weren't together. I had sold Extreme Music to Viacom and was coming here to run that. And she came over as my assistant. It all got very sordid and weird.
Well, you know what? I find that love can blossom in a different kind of way in LA. I think
that's true.
I mean, because that's what happened to me. I came here and fell madly in love. Yeah, and it was all a bit sordid to start with, let's be honest.
Yeah.
A little cool with
that. That's another podcast.
That goes with the other one that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So that's for the X-rated podcast. We'll do that at 10 o'clock tonight.
Okay. But I suppose the answer is definitely changed direction. And it changed... I don't know if you found this, because I'm not going to make this super personal, because I had been married before. And what I found was that the person you're with, if they're your best mate, you definitely change. You can be yourself. And that gives you the space to be more creative, I think. In many relationships, I was someone that I don't even recognize now. Is this getting too...
No, it's really interesting.
And I think you put so much energy into your relationship, especially if you are not being true to yourself, that it burns up that creative space. And that's what I definitely realized. As soon as I was like, well, this is someone I can just relax with and be myself and we're friends first, it kind of freed up a lot of energy, I found. And much better things started happening in my personal life, but certainly in my professional life.
I wish everyone had such a great answer. Seriously, oh. Everyone's going to be really boring after that answer.
Oh, wow.
It's a really good answer.
I said something interesting.
Is there a romantic song that resonates with the two of you, sort of in a special
way? Probably Why Don't We Do It in the Road?
Okay. Of course that's the song. What? Why would I even think that it wouldn't be the song? Are we going to do a version of that with the opera men?
Yeah, I gave you that great answer and then completely wiped it out.
Well, like, we need an operatic version.
I don't know. We have a relationship where we joke around, and if it gets all soppy and gooey and romantic, we'd just laugh at each other, I think, if I said this is our song.
How long have you been together now?
What time is it now?
5:30.
We've now been together around 14 years.
And you have children?
Oh, that's terrible.
How many?
I have 5 kids. Ridiculous.
Okay.
Tell people I'm Pavlov's retarded dog. 2 from my first marriage. They're older, 20, 26 and 20. And then I have younger kids, twins of 9 and their 10-year-old.
And how, boys, girls?
I'm not sure. I'm trying not to.
You're so modern.
Yeah, I know. 3 girls, 2 boys. 2 dogs, 2 cats.
Well, I met one of your dogs. I'm a big dog person. I've got 3 furry babies, a dog and 2 cats.
Oh.
Right. In fact, I was having a problem a few minutes ago with my cat that opened the door to this room to come in when I was doing the podcast. And I had to put you on mute so I could shout at the cat to stop opening the outdoor to the outside.
Yeah, cats are... We have 2 silver Bengals.
Do you? Oh, they're beautiful.
And they howl.
Do they?
Yeah, they howl. Especially at night. Weird. Just weird.
Like any specific time at night?
Just as, not particularly. Usually just as I'm going to sleep. That's
really?
When they, yeah.
I've never heard of that.
They do weird, strange, scratchy things, you know. But you met McLovin.
Yes. He just slept the whole time in your studio.
That's all he does. That's McLovin. And then Baxter, who's not here... He's upstairs. I'm not going to bring him down because I try not to let the dogs in the studio. My son, for Father's Day, gave me this portrait of him, which I'm going to show you.
Oh, let me see. Okay, listeners, I'm looking at the most gorgeous. Is it a Shih Tzu?
He is a Maltipoo.
Maltipoo in like very regal. Is it a tunic with a sword?
Like a princely tunic, I think, would be a good way of saying it. And then you can see...
So it's Sir Baxter, really.
Sir Baxter. And then you can see his overbite, which they've captured.
I can. I wish everyone else could see this. I do.
They say that he can actually eat an apple through a tennis racket.
I wish that this was the image we were going to use as your artwork for posting the podcast.
I'll send it over.
I think it's perfect.
I'll send you a screenshot.
I think it really encapsulates this conversation.
I know. I'm very excited about it.
What a lovely present.
The perfect place to hang it.
Perfect gift.
It's just sitting at my feet at the moment.
So what's next for you? Obviously, we've got the Fabulous Opera Men later this year.
We've got the Fabulous Opera Men. That's really coming up quickly now. So
yeah, it sure is.
We've got to nail down the rest of the songs. Oh, I don't know what I can say and what I can't say. We're doing an enormous, the biggest natural history project we've ever done.
Is that with the BBC or...?
It is with the BBC and another partner. I can't talk about it, but it's so ambitious and so scary, but it's going to be enormous. And that's for, it won't be released till 22, but it's going to be over a year's worth of work.
And you bring together your entire team to work on that?
Well, there'll be 2 composers and Hans as well. Hans will do the main theme and then there'll be 2 composers because it's such a big project. That's like doing 5 movies. So there's that. Simpson starts up again in about 3 weeks. That's always a ride.
Yeah, that's such a great gig.
Yeah, it's such a great gig. And then a lot of our scripted shows were put on hold because of COVID, but the UK is now opening up production. So one I can talk about, which is if we did a German scripted psychological thriller called Pug and Peek, which was really great. It was a Netflix show. And we're doing season two of that, and then we have a big ITV period drama that we're starting on in a few weeks as well.
You're busy, aren't you? There's no rest for the wicked, that's for sure.
Listen, let me tell you something. I used to be a controller in a minicab company in Seven Sisters. Nothing is harder than that. This is a walk in the park.
Well, it's clearly something that you love doing, and you're incredibly successful at what you do. I understand that it would be incredibly enjoyable all at the same time.
People I run into that have had real jobs tend to be grateful. And I don't know what you've done. I sold car wax door to door. I was a car insurance.
I need a bit of that right now.
Come on.
Can you wear a mask?
Yes. People ask me that even when there's no COVID.
Really? No, they don't. No, they don't. Okay, he's teasing everybody. I fell for that one.
So it always feels we feel very lucky, and it always feels fragile, and there's incredible new talent coming up all the time. So when you've had it rough for a while, you're always looking over your shoulder. I think it keeps you on your toes. I think it's healthy.
Well, for people listening, I think you're an inspiration. You are. And last question.
Yes.
What advice would you give to youngsters who are listening in who would love to do what you do?
Oh, can I give them bad advice so that they don't become...
Any advice?
I don't know. I think, look, you've got to always strive to be the best at what you do. I think in any career, to be successful, you've got to strive and practice and continue to practice and stretch yourself. That is a given nowadays, especially nowadays where we have so much access to talent, and even musical talent is better nowadays, I think, than it used to be, because we have so much access on YouTube to actually see how to really learn to play instruments. 50% of it is talent. 50% of it is to be able to get on with people, be in the room with people, and not kill the buzz. You know, the vibe is everything in music. And I think I learned from being in the studio as a tape op and an assistant and making coffee for years and stuff. A big part of it is just learning to read people. And so easy to get it wrong.
And a lot of hard work, right?
People say that to me all the time. And it is, honestly, I think you're right. There is a lot of hard work. But you do feel a bit guilty when you see people really working. I see people like packing bags and really working, like standing on the top of tall buildings, construction sites. So
it's
It is a different kind of working hard, but I always feel a little bit guilty when I say I'm working hard.
The thing is that people need music. Music brings happiness.
Yes.
And it's a special something that lives within all of our lives. So I think it's okay to say that you work hard within music alongside someone who's in construction buildings.
I think what is important, and I think you touched on it is when I met Hans, is if you can, strive to surround yourself with people that are a bit more talented than yourself. It pushes you, and there's a trickle down. There is, I think of the people that I work with and the younger people coming up, I'm amazed at how incredibly talented they are. And they teach me something every day. I expect something and they always over-deliver. And then, look, people can say no. You can make any phone call. I was never afraid to pick up the phone to anyone. I mean, you know, we'd have worked a couple of years ago with Coldplay and Sia, and they can only say no. And I think that's a piece of advice I give my son now, who's coming into the industry as well.
Is he a composer?
He is, but he's really a guitarist. Well, he's both, I would say, now.
Hence borrowing the guitars that are situated behind you.
Yeah, I'll never know where my guitars are.
Right, okay.
It's very annoying. But he is a composer now. That's advice I'd give everyone. Everybody wants to work, and everyone wants to work with great talent. So they can only say no. I think I'll have that on my headstone, as well as Now Will You Believe I'm Ill.
Oh my goodness, what a note to end on.
Oh, there you go.
Well, listen, it's been such a pleasure chatting to you. Thank you for coming on the show.
You're very kind.
You made me laugh.
Oh.
You really did make me laugh.
Well, there you go. I'm practicing my tight 10. So maybe maybe by the end of this, I'll be opening at the comedy store.
Well, I hope so. And make sure you let me know, because I'll be sitting front row.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
And in the meantime, stay safe and healthy. And I can't wait to collaborating with you further for our wonderful opera men. And yeah, until then, stay safe again.
You do the same.
I will. Thank you to our lovely listeners, and you'll be hearing from me on For Love and Music again very soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph. For more information, you can check out at For Love and Music Official on Instagram, at For Love and Music Official on Facebook, and also visit www.jamartistgroup.com/podcast.